Welcome to Speak Up, Speak Out, progressive voices from around the valley and around the nation, conversing about issues important to our community.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Speak Up, Speak Out. I'm Jenny Wolf. Two events at this year's Skagit Human Rights Festival at the Philip Terrell Theater treat the topic of genocide. On March 12th, Dr. James Waller, renowned scholar in the field of Holocaust and genocide studies, will speak on Genocide in Our Time, Why Darfur Matters. The April 2nd talk will feature my current guest, a self-taught authority on what happened in the aftermath of the collapse of the former Yugoslavia. Longtime human rights activist and writer Peter Lippman has spent many years researching human rights issues in Eastern Europe, as well as Israel, Palestine, and Latin America. He's been traveling to Bosnia and other parts of the former Yugoslavia since 1981, lived in northern Serbia for a year, and speaks fluent Bosnian, Croatian, Serbian. The Advocacy Project, a Washington, D.C.-based NGO, sent Peter to Bosnia, Kosovo, Guatemala, and Ecuador to research and report on grassroots human rights campaigns. In the last few years, he's been working on a book about post-war Bosnia. Peter Lippman will be speaking at the Philip Terrell Theater at Skagit Valley College on April 2nd at 7 p.m. In conjunction with Peter's presentation, there's a display of remarkable quilts, actually more like carpets, woven by a collective of Bosnian women commemorating the thousands of slain Muslim men and boys who were massacred in Srebrenica in 1995 during the Bosnian War. The quilts will be on display at the Lincoln Theater during the month of March and at the Philip Terrell Theater on the campus of Skagit Valley College for three festival events on March 12th, 17th, and on April 2nd. Welcome, Peter Lippman, to Speak Up, Speak Out.
Thank you very much.
Peter, the war in Bosnia is not in the public eye anymore, but you are still very engaged in what's going on there. Can you tell us what you want people to know about that war and how it has and is still affecting the Bosnian people?
Well, among other things, I'd like to counter the kind of talk radio, simplistic, popularized impression that this was the result of an ancient ethnic hostility of people who've been at each other's throats for hundreds of years. It's true that former Yugoslavia and especially Bosnia are places of very mixed ethnicity and different religious communities. However, the conflict, quite contrary to popular conception, is actually not related to religious and ethnic animosities. On the whole, I don't even believe generally that that's what causes the war. But in any case, getting to the Yugoslav situation, what happened was that after the death of President Tito in 1980, inflation happened at a fantastic rate. People were going into debt, losing their life savings, and into that political vacuum came several political demagogues, leaders who saw their chance to manipulate people by opportunistically using that superficial difference between people, namely their background, ethnic background, to divide and conquer. And this is what I want to say about that war, is that it was essentially a war perpetrated by the new elite, the new ethnocratic elite, against ordinary people with the goal of eventually plundering the socially created wealth. I know that's a mouthful, but it was about robbery, and that's what war is usually about, after all, not about religion and ethnicity.
Can you tell me how you got interested and immersed in this story as thoroughly as you are?
Well, the most immediate cause, my already having been there before the war and having had a personal connection to the region and to the culture, was that I worked as a volunteer helping Bosnian refugees here during the war, people who came to Seattle, several families in 1993, and I became very close with them because I could speak their language in the ensuing years, and I felt compelled by their stories and intrigued, and I felt like I had to go back and try to work to understand what was going on. And of course, what happened when I got back there and started doing various jobs just to be there, people would say to me, well, you can't understand what's going on. We don't understand what happened. And I my response was, okay, well, I'll work to get to understand as much as I can and then try and push that boundary a little further.
Have you always been a human rights activist?
Ever since I could be an activist in my teenage years was when the Vietnam War was going on, and I had and have three brothers who were subject to the same influences. We came from a liberal but not activist family, but became activists. We were kind of compelled to because, among other things, like all other young men and eventual high school graduates, we were faced with the draft, and in any case, we morally totally objected to that war and eventually connected that to many other social ills and felt like it was our responsibility to do something about that, to try and change that situation, end the war, and by extension, to work for human rights.
If it's possible, give us a brief history of the terribly complicated mess that ensued when Yugoslavia dissolved.
Well, it's not possible, but I'll try.
Okay.
I'll do what I can. The mess that happened when Yugoslavia dissolved, basically what started it, continuing from my earlier description of the inflation and demagogic manipulation, was that an extreme nationalist movement, I think I could responsibly call it a fascist movement, arose in the mid-80s in Serbia, led by Serbian President Slobodan Milosevic. He was the strong man, and he was the first really popular leader since the death of Tito 6 or 8 years earlier, but he was really only popular among the Serbs. And they being the most populous ethnicity and nation in that federation had a lot of power, and it was quite a threat because they were kind of bulldozing civic forces that were in their way, and it looked like they were expanding into the creation of a longtime dream of a greater Serbia. Now, in response to that movement, a similar one, kind of mirroring that, arose in Croatia, led by President Franjo Tudjman, in the neighboring Republic of Croatia. Now, these are all parts of one of a federation. Those are two of six of the republics. There's also Bosnia, Macedonia, Montenegro, and Slovenia. And gradually, things became more and more tense in the late 80s and the early 90s. And in 1991, the middle of the year, Croatia and Slovenia seceded and immediately were attacked by Serbia to prevent their secession. They had a constitutional right to secession, but certainly Serbia was going to keep as much territory for itself, for greater Serbia, as it was able to. Now, it lost and gave up that war in 10 days in Slovenia, where there was territory that they didn't care so much about anyway. It was pretty much ethnically homogeneously Slovenian. Quite the opposite case in Croatia, where the war dragged on for the rest of the year, and they took over about at least a third of the country. In the next year, the tension and hostilities moved to neighboring Bosnia, where there was quite a different situation ethnically. There was not one ethnic majority, but three minorities or pluralities, that being the Bosnian Croats, the Bosnian Serbs, and the Bosnian Muslims, who are their secular name is Bosniaks, and I tend to call them that out of respect for that secular identity. And In March and April, there was an invasion by Serb forces from Serbia, and also logistic support of domestic Bosnian Serb separatist forces. So there was kind of a collusion between Bosnian Serbs and Serbia, and they very quickly took over about two-thirds of the country and set up concentration camps and expelled Bosnian Croats and Muslims from the area that they controlled, and killed many ultimately. In that 3.5-year war, 100,000 people were killed and over 2 million displaced or made refugees. Now, there's much more to this story, but I think, as I said before, it's not possible to keep it short. But just to wind it up and skip a lot of important history, military factors on the ground in mid to late 1995 made it possible for negotiations to take place at Dayton Air Base, Air Force Base in Ohio, and the Dayton Peace Agreement was established, which included a new constitution. Unfortunately, that constitution and that peace agreement acknowledged and ratified, legitimized the partition, the separation of ethnicities in Bosnia. Ethnic cleansing, the now commonly used term, had succeeded in creating 90 to 100% ethnically homogenized territories in the country. And so there are now two entities. One is a Serb-controlled entity, and that's called the Republika Srpska, Serb Republic, and the other is called the Federation. It's Croat, joint Croat and Bosniak controlled. And I don't want to leave out the mention of the most notorious massacre, which happened towards the end of the war in July 1995, where...
Let me stop you right there, because that's the connection with the quilts that are being displayed during the festival, which commemorate this massacre. And I'll let you say the name because you pronounce it better than I do. So now tell us what happened. I'll try. It's Srebrenica?
You said it very well.
Thank you. And how does the massacre there fit into the bigger picture of the war?
Okay, it does fit in a very important way. What happened was that the Serb extremist forces were taking over increasingly large amounts of land, and international diplomats were trying, under great frustration, to arrange negotiations. And I think their first and ongoing mistake was that they were trying to arrange negotiations based on the map. So as soon as you negotiate based on the map, you talk about who gets which territory. And, of course, then that ends up in partition and ethnic separation. And specifically in the eastern part of Bosnia near Serbia, there were several small enclaves, perhaps comparable to a county in Washington state, with, say, 20 to 50,000 inhabitants, many of them displaced people.
Would you define enclave?
It's an area inhabited by one ethnicity and surrounded by another, and besieged, at least in that context, that's what it was. And these so-called safe areas or safe zones were recognized and declared as such by the United Nations Security Council in 1993 as they were just about to be overrun, and that prevented their fall until 1995 when the Serb forces had just maneuvered into a very overwhelming position of military superiority. So that's what was happening in the middle of 1995, was that they were ready to finish the map, basically, consolidate their holdings and their territory. They were not willing to allow a remnant of Bosniak-controlled territory isolated deep within the territory that they had taken over. And so, having been surrounding and besieging the Srebrenica enclave for well over 2 years, over 2.5 years, they overran it, took it over on July 11th, 1995, and people from dozens of villages and from the town of Srebrenica fled to the nearby UN battalion headquarters staffed by Dutch troops called Dutch Bat in the hope of having protection there by the Dutch. Now, the Dutch were more interested in looking out, saving their own skin, and not resisting the Serbs, and after a day or so, they allowed the Serb forces to take these Bosniaks away. And what they did was they deported the women and children, most of them, to the front line, and they took the men away and shot them. Meanwhile, there were some 8,000 or 10,000 more men who had made the decision to march through the hills and through the woods to safe territory, and the Serb forces picked off thousands of them, adding to that number of massacred Bosniak victims. Some of them who were not picked off did escape, some 5,000, but the rough figure of those massacred is about 8,000. And they were killed in the course of 4 or 5 days in different areas in a very organized operation, complete with fuel, drivers, buses, bulldozers to bury them, people to come in and itself, and this was directed by one of the last remaining indicted fugitive war criminals, Ratko Mladic, the general and commander of the Bosnian Serb forces.
So you're saying this was pre-planned and highly organized?
Yes, it's quite clear that it was, and besides my own assertion, there's plenty of evidence of that that has been presented in various trials, extensive war crimes trials in The Hague at the International Criminal Tribunal for former Yugoslavia.
You are listening to Speak Up, Speak Out. I'm speaking with Peter Lippman, lifelong human rights activist who is a self-taught authority on Bosnia, the war there in the 1990s, and what's happened since. Peter, BOSFAM is the organization responsible for making the quilts that will be on display in Mount Vernon. What is BOSFAM?
That's right. BOSFAM, which is named after Oxfam, is actually one of the oldest non-governmental organizations or NGOs in Bosnia, formed during the war, a little more than 15 years ago. And it was formed by and for displaced women, primarily from Srebrenica in the town of Tuzla in the northeastern part of Bosnia, which is one of the main places where displaced Srebrenicans and survivors from the eastern part of Bosnia wound up during and after the war. And so there were all these women, many widows. There are said to be over 6,000 widows just from Srebrenica alone, with nothing to do, no income, demoralized, traumatized, wondering where their loved ones were. They had not been discovered in mass graves yet, fearful and destitute. And this organization was founded by a woman, former principal of the high school in Srebrenica, a woman named Beba Hadžić, who was a natural leader and saw that people were sitting around, and she said, well, if we can sit, we can knit. And she got people to work creating articles of clothing for sale, and it was just something that gave them some confidence and a little pocket money and helped the organization get going. Along the way, eventually they also started weaving, practicing a traditional handicraft that was known in the villages in that region from the period of the Ottoman occupation. So they were weaving these flat weave rugs known as kilims. They're somewhat similar to the Mexican and Navajo rugs that we see sometimes in texture and very beautiful, colorful in design. The organization BOSFAM is at the same time a women's crafts cooperative and also an advocacy organization which tries to help its members return to Srebrenica and other places they come from, and also calls for truth and justice, especially in advocating the arrest of accused war criminals.
I have some more information on the quilts and how people can see them and support the effort at the end of this interview. You've been back to Bosnia many times since the war has ended. What's happened during those years?
Well, what I personally focus on is grassroots human rights campaigns, because the country is such a mess and the leaders have proven not interested in making life better, particularly for their own people, but more keeping them divided so they can plunder the nationally created wealth. So I think the answer to that, as in any human rights situation really, is for there to be a grassroots organization that agitates for resolution of those problems. And the first campaign, and a very big long one, was to make it possible for refugees and internally displaced people to return to their pre-war homes, which in most cases were under the control now of a dominating other ethnicity. Unfortunately, the response to that